Hello, and welcome to the Property Solopreneur podcast, a show for property investors and developers who want to build and grow their own profitable businesses. I'm sharing with you my decades of property experience and interviewing many other successful property people who are happy to share their varied and priceless knowledge freely. Business doesn't need to be hard, and nor do you need to be lucky. But as a certified strategist, I know you need a plan to work to. And a good start is by listening to other people's successes and failures. Why reinvent the wheel? This allows us to have a more in-depth knowledge of the wider property world. Welcome to this week's episode of the Property Solopreneur. And whilst listening to my groups this week, it's clear that if you're new to property, it's very easy to think that we all get into property for the same thing. To make lots of money very quickly, please. And then we just get into a rut and do lots more of the same. Or perhaps for the more adventurous, we branch out and do property a little bit differently, but for the same long-term reason. And that's so not true. I've been in property for nearly 25 years, and the people I've met in property have definitely fallen into different camps. The first are those who know that property is going to change their lives for the better. You know, literally going to make a big difference to them. And they do their thing for a couple of years to make sure they've got the money they need. And then they hang up the property boots and go back to whatever they were doing in the first place, but now financially secure. These are, in my view, very successful property people. But quite often, those of us left behind are left wondering what happened to them. You know, where have they gone? What did they do wrong? Well, actually, they did nothing wrong. It's just they don't need the property world anymore. They've done what they want, and they're back in what they call the real world. The second are perhaps those who come into property and become overnight successes because they are very visible, and then they crash and burn. Now, the crash and burners, some are definitely rotten eggs. They end up in jail for a number of reasons, some of them visiting jail more than once. And there are those who have endless court cases against them. So whilst never actually being committed, are sailing pretty close to the wind. Those are the bad ones. But many crash and burn because, well, it is awfully easy when you start to think that property always works and that's a guaranteed path to success. These people don't mean to get it wrong. Perhaps they're just a little bit careless with legislation. They don't adhere to the rules about financial matters, or they overextend themselves. The problem is here is they'd always, when they go down, generally take down other people's money with them. And that really is upsetting to see and hear. When I was co-host of the Bucks Property Meet, we had more than one speaker who was at the top of their game when they came and spoke. They inspired many. They were fabulous people to listen to, yet went bust. And this is why I think that it's really important to know exactly what you need to do when you have a property business. It's what I do with my clients when we work on strategy days, when I work with them for accountability, or we do one-to-one sessions on particular parts of property. How can you go from where you are now to where you need to be safely? How do you use your skills with your risk profile that suits you and is sustainable? In short, building a business that is for you, that suits you and not somebody else's idea of what a property business is. Property is very individual. One size does not fit all. If you are thinking that's the kind of thing you're thinking about, then contact me via the links in the show notes. Go on, jump on a Zoom and let's get talking about how you can create the business that's going to work for you. And then there are the third group. They're my favourite. They've been around for what seems like forever. They found property one way or another, and they've been very successful. They planned what they wanted to do, and then they've done it. But rather than going, well, that's it, thank you very much, they've decided that they want to do some more. So they dip in and out of sight as they move from one property genre to another. Some create training courses, others platforms for other property people to use. Sometimes they even move into the corporate world of property. Now, that's a huge sector that we never even talk about on property investing podcasts, etc. And I think these are people we can really learn from. They've been through the bad times. They know that you never stop learning. They know that there's always another crisis just around the corner that will be different to the last problem that we all learned how to get through. And as my guest today says, they've learned to surf the problems and keep afloat, which is what we need to learn to do. I first met Ed Foulkes over 10 years ago when he was the host of the biggest PIN meeting in London. He was already a property veteran by then, and he was enthusiastic and truly inspiring. He created a loyal band of followers who travelled often over 100 miles to come to London once a month to come to this meeting. And since then, he's gone on to create multiple businesses, some of which have been successful, others less so. But he's still here, still working in property and working in new areas that he can develop, often to help other entrepreneurs and property people. So I was very pleased that he could find the time in his very crowded diary, because he's launching his new enterprise very shortly, so that he could share with us some of his knowledge and learnings. So, Ed, welcome to the Property Solopreneur. Exactly who are you for people who've not met you, and what do you do?
Well, probably actually we have met as well, I guess. So I'm Ed Folkes, and I've been in real estate for 30 years. Almost exclusively in residential, although towards the end a little bit of mixed use. I started as a buy-to-let landlord and a very small-time dealer, lethargical, domestic, I guess. Just the first flat I ever bought was a two-bedroom flat. I kind of, you know, made it better and sold it on. And then eventually I developed institutional assets, the likes of legal investors, others that are student accommodation, dogs, rents, that sort of thing.
So, as you say, you started off by owning your own investment flat at a very early age. You know, 1993, you bought your first house. Most people think that they're getting into property early at 40. You obviously had this little moment when you thought, no, I'm getting in early.
I was very fortunate. My grandmother kind of penned to me and said to me, I'm going to die one day. I'm going to give you 10 grand now. And I was just thinking about growing dreadlocks at that stage. I hadn't even started. But I looked at the bar and I looked at the £10,000 and I thought, it's not going to last. So I better do something useful with it. And that kind of, in a way, was one of the catalysts that made me the person I am today. You know, and it allowed me to think differently about opportunities and options and choices and that sort of thing. So, I'm very grateful to my grandmother for those things. So that's definitely one of the things that she's playing part for.
Absolutely. Because it's only when you've got an investment property and that first, I own a lot in Stoke-on-Trent, when the average rent is, used to be 400, now it's 600. But the first time you get that first rent in and you haven't earned it technically this month, it's just come. You get a light bulb moment, don't you? And you think, if I can do more of this, then that frees up my time to go and do stuff that I really want to do. And in your case, being a bit of an entrepreneur, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so. But I think it's not, I think I'm a creator at heart. So I'm not really interested in, setting up businesses that just trade stuff, that kind of stuff pass through the funnel and we just take a commission on the back end. That's not the bit that really interests me. So yesterday, for example, we had this Table Network, which is the business I'm currently kind of growing with my son, which is really to help people like me and the upcoming people like him really not fall in so many holes. Yeah, that's the whole basis of it. It's just to support SME business owners and entrepreneurs and that sort of thing. And we had our first online event yesterday on our network meeting. We didn't make any money from it because it's the first one and the first one's always free. But it's actually just the fact that people seem to get some value out of it. And that really makes me, as a creative person, just go, that's really cool. How can we make it better so that they get more value next time? Because I'm always looking at the details. I just want to kind of put it apart and these real guys and say, will it work better next time? And then look at it next time and go, no, that didn't work at all. Let's just do it again. Every time you're kind of rearranging the spaghetti in a different shape, I'm hoping eventually it looks beautiful.
Absolutely. But that is, I think, a definition of entrepreneurism as opposed to a business owner. And there's an awful lot of nonsense in the property world about everyone's a property entrepreneur. No, they're not. Most people are just business owners who just do one thing. Whereas an entrepreneur, it is about thinking outside the box and trying to do things slightly differently, isn't it?
So I think that there is a difference. Sadly, early on was the difference between a business owner. So typically, for example, we're a network of SMEs or SMEs owners and entrepreneurs, and kind of at least 60% of SME owners, they were just a good plasterer or a good plumber, or they were a good dentist, or they were good at something, and therefore others sort of ended up getting extra work because they had too much. Yeah. And eventually you get a pool of, if you're a plasterer, 20 plasterers working for you effectively, and you end up being a business owner. Yeah, and it's just because you were good at your job. And on the other side, I think there is an attitude of entrepreneurs where you sort of want to help change the world to more the vision you think it wants to be. And I think from that point of view, you're right, I'm a lawyer. But equally, I was a very good plasterer. When I, you know, I picked it up really quickly. And my son, who I'm in the business with, he's incredibly good at math and incredibly good at coding and tech and that sort of thing. And so all his ideas are around that. And how can we make the business better by making the tech work more efficiently? You know, and that's really where his value comes into being the entrepreneur within the business. That's it.
And yes, and that if you are an entrepreneur, you're going to have to know that you're going to have to put a certain amount of time aside outside the running of the business, because you need that creative space. You need to try new things. And entrepreneurs have to know that not everything works. Some things just don't have legs.
Well, and I think that's for any business owner, but especially the kind of more creative. Creative people are generally quite emotional about their ideas. Yeah.
Yes.
And they think
I
that.
I own that.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah. AI own it. It's my baby. And if it never dies, I'm going to be mortified and all that sort of thing. So I think there's an element of, you know, if it doesn't work, I'm just going to be depressed for a long time. So obviously, you work with Susie Cole. Yeah, I love Susie. And she had a thing where you're allowed to shout and scream when someone goes wrong for 5 minutes. The whole office is allowed to have a real fit. And then afterwards, it's back to work because we gave you that 5 minutes to be really, really cross. And now it's like, okay, forget about it. Calm down. It's just all. And make it better next time, as I say.
Absolutely. And also because emotions get in the way of good decision-making. You know, I had a complete drama on Tuesday. I was in court, I thought, just to literally watch one of my evictions go through. And in fact, it turned into a complete nightmare where we ended up having to do a deal with the tenants and all sorts of things due to the judge being unfriendly towards landlords, basically. Technically, we should have won straight away, but we thought life's too short. So I had, you know, that moment of ripping up my tissue to shreds and, you know, sort of, my knuckles were white. And then I thought, get over this. We've just deal with the problem, get it to where we need it to be. And then you can go and rant afterwards for, you know, with a coffee or whatever. And that's what you have to do in business, isn't it? It's just go, what's the long game? What am I actually trying to achieve?
Yeah. Well, I think there's that balance, isn't there? So I absolutely, you know, I've always started with the end in mind, but actually went back when I was, you know, 21. I had no idea what the end even looked like. You know, it's kind of next week was further than I could ever imagine. But I think there's an element of, you know, now I want to really work out what I want to build in the next 10 years and then kind of aim for that. And that's always at the end of the map. And because I'm on a map rather than that, you know, it's never a linear path. Things go wrong along the way, but you just need to know where you're aiming for at the top, right? And I think there's an element of that where, but it also, it leads to procrastination. Because if you're trying to understand the puzzle that much, then you just never get started, right? Because you're just trying to build all the detail in your head, and put it down on paper. And then you're like, but now it's so big, I'm overwhelmed, you know, and I can't start.
That is where you know, because I always, when working with my clients, go, where are you going to end up? Now, I do understand, I so get that bit about when you're younger, you can't imagine yourself ever being old. I mean, I do remember getting an invitation to two friends' party, had their parents' party. They were both 50, and it was 100 years of this couple, and it was dinner and dancing. And I was in my early 20s, and I remember thinking, well, there won't be any dancing. I mean, who at 50 dances?
Yeah.
You know, and you just have to remember that, you know, you will get to this stage at some point. So you've got to know roughly where you're going to go and then go, right, that's where I'm going. That's going to happen in 10 years. That's what's happening this year. What am I doing in the next 90 days? And somehow, if you can then park the rest, what you've got to do today becomes a lot clearer, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, so I remember, you know, when I was maybe 21, maybe 17, thinking, actually, I'd rather be dead by the time I was 50 because I can't see anyone over 50 ever having fun. And now, of course, I'm over 50 and I feel still like I'm 17 most of the time. So, you know, I haven't really grown up at all. And I kind of go, well, actually, it's not too bad, really, is it?
No, I know. And it is something that we all just have to remember that age is just a number on a piece of paper, isn't it? Now, we met quite a long time ago when you were the pin host of Canary Wharf, which was, it still is, a big meeting as opposed to a tiny one. And that's because you worked out very early on that networking, absolutely vital for anybody who's in business. Why is that? What do you think you get out of networking?
Well, I mean, I don't think I worked it out, actually. Completely blame it on Simon Zitchi, who showed me what the power of networking was. I'd never, before I met Simon, I'd never been to any networking at all. And the only people I knew were literally the estate agents, the lawyers, and the builders, and that was it. You know, that was my kind of whole base of people that I knew within work business. So it was really coming across Titan in 2011. And then when he said to me, I was a Blackrush client, and I said, why don't you have a pin in East London? You know, all my old mates, they're all developers on this, yeah. Property owners, like, what? It's just the perfect place to have them. And he basically turned around to me and said, because you haven't asked me to run one yet, you know, but if you're going, and I kind of looked at him and went, you little bastard, I can't believe you said that to me. So excuse for the broken French there. And so that's actually why I started it. And I just, you know, I'd been to maybe 3 networking meetings at the point that you asked me that, and I realized what was there, and I sort of went, yeah, okay, it's a no-brainer. I can't say no to that opportunity.
No.
So I'm just going to have to do it. And of course, since then, because that was over 10 years ago now, and I've done an awful lot of both running a very large networking meetings, speaking at other networking meetings, and I've run mentoring groups where people network, and I've backed around what we now call tables as part of Table Network, why we call them Table Network, which are kind of very close groups where people really mastermind and interact with each other and support each other in a very fundamental way. And then also board meetings, you know, and non-exec meetings and that sort of thing. And it's more effectively kind of networking in other ways. And then over, lockdown, where it had been kind of transmitted to Zoom, and then you realize the benefits of that, not having to travel or not being stuck talking to someone that you couldn't escape for half an hour. It was really boring. All they wanted to talk about was their business. And you're just like, I didn't come here to listen to you. And so Simon calls them vampires, actually, because they're there to suck your blood.
Yes.
It was a great description.
Yes.
And so networking, what does it do? I mean, I think it's about the interaction, but you actually have to always look at it and do it the right way to gain value from it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So everyone, myself included, I'm not being rude, but we're all inherently selfish kind of thing. We have our own agenda, right? We have to approach
the world. What's in it for me?
Yeah. So the kind of first thing you have to realize with networking is that you give first. You have to reverse that polarity so that they can be selfish and find you amazing. Yeah. That's basically, so give first, and then they will automatically, and if they don't give back, then we didn't need to meet them, right? If they do give back, then it was worthwhile. And I think the other thing, and obviously now at the end of my monologue, I can say it and shut up, is that you have 2 ears and 1 mouth, right? And so therefore, you should listen twice as hard as you speak.
Oh, absolutely. But it one of the things that absolutely amazes me is I think there is a fundamental difference now between networking and property meets before COVID and afterwards. There does seem to have been a disconnect. People have forgotten how to engage. So whereas before, you could go into a property meet and you'd come out with an absolute pocket full of cards, which allowed you to speak to lots and lots of people, then do some sieving and talking, and you could sift down to a group of people who you'd know you're going to move on with and probably know for years. I'm encountering lots of people who just go, oh, I don't have business cards. And they want everything now at this one meeting when you've just met, the first date, and they want your inside leg measurement, and you're left feeling slightly bruised and going, whoa, I've only, you know, and people are giving up on going 40 minutes an hour to a networking meeting. What do you think, if you're new to networking, that somebody should do to make sure they get the best out of that evening? Because actually, by the time you've bought the ticket and driven there and then had a cup of coffee, it's quite a financial output, isn't it?
Oh, well, I mean, actually, I think the biggest cost is time, because of course, if you run a business, your time should be valuable, and it takes 5 hours to go to an in-person networking meeting, but suddenly you've done travel, and then the speakers who are selling you stuff, and then the actual networking afterwards. It's kind of, and I like networking, right? So I like that bit. So I extend that bit 1 hour to 3 hours if I can. So for me, it's an 8-hour journey if I do it in person. And I want to make, you know, that should be worth, what, £1,000 or more? Yeah, if I would spend 8 hours at something. And realistically, it should be worth 2,000, you know, if I'm doing my job properly. At which point, how can I guarantee that 8 hours? Well, you can't, but you have to make sure that you use the kind of the actual time you've got to talking to people as well as possible. So what should people do? So I think in the world, I agree with no business cards. I mean, we have business cards, but I prefer not to give them out to people. One of the issues with giving your business card is that you're relying on the other person to have kept it, not lost it, remember who you were, and that sort of thing. So on my business cards, and I would take one out of my pocket to show people, but I don't have my wallet on me. I have my photograph, or a photograph of me. And it's really, really useful. And I also have a QR code where people can book a call with me, because if they want to follow up, then they want to be able to book a call straight away. So it goes straight to my calendar. So I think that's useful. But actually, I think the most useful way these days, because everyone has a mobile phone that they've got on, and most business people have LinkedIn on the mobile phone. So if you open LinkedIn, now on the top where you kind of into the search bar LinkedIn, if you click in it, then on the right-hand side, there's a little kind of square thing, and you click on that, it brings up a QR code and you connect on LinkedIn immediately.
True, but now, the a lot reason of the places a lot of the places where I am, the internet doesn't work very well.
Well, that is a problem. Okay.
Yeah, and you don't know that. And also, when I'm in a room full of people talking, I'm partially deaf. So I actually can't hear what someone is saying. You know, when somebody goes, open your phone, I won't necessarily hear the difference between sounds and consonants. So without a card, I'm not going to be able to connect with you.
So I think the reason I like LinkedIn is because when you connect with people on LinkedIn, it does it chronologically. So when you go back, you can see who you connected with last night. Whereas if you put them straight into your phone book, they're lost forever.
I know. I had to explain to a dear young man the other day that he was enchanting, but I wasn't going to remember him the next morning.
That's great. Yeah. So, I mean, I sometimes call people or text message people or that sort of thing because, you know, but again, it's about the, so cards, if you, you know, if I go to Brendan Quinn, runs a really good networking meeting in London, Central London Property Meet, and that's in a basement. So when I'm talking to people downstairs, it has to be by card. So I always take cards to this meeting.
But that tells me straight away that you're very serious about networking. So you've already worked out how to get the best out of everything. It's not a one sort of shop. It's if I'm in this area, I can use this system. If I'm there, I can use a card or whatever. My aim is to make sure I make that contact because you never know who you're going to meet, do you? Never know.
But I think it's, you know, I'm running a business.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it for fun. Right. And if I fail my business, then they should sack me. Right. So I should be sacking myself. And that's frustrating.
You'd be amazed. I think there's been a fundamental forgetfulness about the fact this is a business. And partly because we work in property, there is this emphasis on the fun of property and how amazing it is. And it's all about the property and all the different things you can do about it. It's a business, isn't it?
Yeah. It's I mean, that idea of, so when one of the things I did, obviously, 1993, I bought my first property, which is bizarrely before Sybee bought his first property. And when, you know, kind of many years later in 2011, I met him. And a lot of people that I started the PIN meeting, a lot of people were kind of, you know, touring the PIN meetings, teaching things, and they were very kind of fluffy and blah, blah, blah. And so I put a talk together for 25 minutes, which was how to not burn your tenants to death. You know, and how to obey the rules while you don't do that kind of thing. Yeah. And that was pretty much it. It was like the 101 or property, you know, owning, having tenants. And also how to, you know, celebrate the fact that they pay every month. Because then really, they're the best customers in the world, right? They're the original SaaS product. You don't even have to teach them during the month. They just keep on paying. They just keep on paying. So why on earth wouldn't you treat them as the best customers in the world? You know, and the idea that people were just buying a portfolio for their retirement rather than running it as a business, just to me was complete and crazy. The amount of compliance that is negotiated and the amount of responsibility as a landlord is actually quite large. And you really need to respect what you are, you know, you've got someone's home in your hands and you really need to respect
that. Have. Yeah, you have not only that, but you could. You've got to know why you're doing a particular sector. So you can't say in one hand, "Well, I don't think you can go." I'm creating homes for people, and then you're going to chuck them out every 2 years because you want to get the maximum amount of rent, and that's the easiest way of doing it. But now your words here: business success is not about avoiding the big waves; it's about surfing them. Because of course, although we've got a business and it's all about property, we have this other thing called the marketplace and the economy, which comes to bite us or move in different directions. Again, what do you think as a new person into buying property and things, what are they going to look for in the wider world to say, hello, be careful?
Well, I think actually this does change over time. So there's a certain amount whereby, you know, so I started off as someone who kind of knew nothing about anything other than I thought, obviously, I was going to rule the world. And oh. I thought I was the most creative person since Salvador Dali and that sort of thing, you know, but I absolutely, you know, knew nothing about nothing. But I was in Hackney and I happened to be very like the other people who were moving into Hackney. Now, I was born and bred there, so I wasn't just moving in. But, you know, I think my dad was probably the original yuppie who used to cycle to the city, which is about, you know, I don't know, took it up 10 minutes to cycle there in a bowler hat, right? That was his crash helmet.
Were the days.
Yeah, those were the days, exactly. So I think that what I learned then was that I was providing for people just like me. So I really understood my market. Yeah. And it was more luck than judgment that happened. Absolutely. But one of the things I did in one of my properties, I tried to kind of knock through between the kitchen and the living room. I found that actually it was a spine wall that had already been compromised in the shop below. So I got the building control in from the council. And luckily, the guy who turned up was a 50-year-old engineer by trade. Sort of thing. So he actually understood the conversation that I was trying to have with him. And I was, my father should have been an engineer. My father had done engineering at Cambridge. I was just the black sheep of the family who'd never thought about it. But I kind of understood the principles. And I'd taken a little bit of plaster off. And I kind of had basically someone who already tried to knock through the wall, cut a few bits of stud out, and then left some bits of stud floating there that weren't actually attached to anything. So I showed him this thing and I said, okay, so we've got this A-frame here. What I want to do is cut a hole out underneath it. I'll put a little bit of an A-frame back under here to kind of help support the structure. And I want to build a hole so that you can walk through. So I kind of built this Zen Buddhist hole that you could walk from one end to the other. And everyone went absolutely ape about it. You know, so over 5 years of ownership, we had 48 hours worth of void period, you know, because before anyone moved out, I had like knocks on the door going, can I move in yet? You know.
And that's what you want,
isn't it?
That is
what you want. So it wasn't as much that I saw the way, but I just kind of traveled with it by default of the fact that I was like my customers. And I think how I think the world has changed is that the internet has made it so that nothing is now about geography. Yeah, it's just about niche. And if there's someone, like if you are someone, there are going to be more than 2,000 people across the globe who are just like you. And basically they want what you can conceive as a result. If you don't need it from your local village, then you can find people who will want what you can provide. You know, you've just got to think about yourself in a way now. And so entrepreneurs, actually, they can really think about their own needs. They can provide things that they needed last week and people will need it next week still. You know, as long as they're not certain, not so long as they're not the action snail in the world and the last one to adapt, then they'll probably be okay.
Yeah, you don't want to be a late adopter, I think is the phrase, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes being an early adopter can be difficult, but there's a sweet spot.
Yes. Yeah. No, being an incredibly early adopter is definitely a challenge. And I think that's the one thing, if anything, I'm slightly early sometimes to a few things. Not many, but I get a lot of, you know, all my creativity comes from genetic stuff being handed down. And when I look at my uncle or I look at my, you know, even my mother, I mean, my mother was a concert pianist. She wasn't exactly uncreated, but her brother. And then I look at my grandmother, their mother and her mother, you know, and every single one of them was just off the charts until the creativity. And I kind of go, okay, well, that's the bit that I just have to kind of rein it in a bit and then it will appeal to other people.
That's very true, absolutely. But of course, we're now working with a lot of people who've never understood what real interest rates are like, aren't we? So there is a generation who think that low interest rates is the norm and are just waiting for it all just to go back to normal, as in 0.25. That's not going to happen, is it?
So I think, one thing I very much try never to do is hold a crystal ball. You know, you can make kind of second guesses, but generally you should always do a, you know, what's the worst case scenario? And do I have 3 strategies to cope with that so that I can do an A, B, C? And if A fails, at least I've still got B and C, right? And do I know when to get out of dodge? Because that's actually the time when, you know, you have to know when to cut your losses. Is it?
That's it.
Yes, that's very hard, very hard.
Yeah, yeah, well, it can be. So it's tough to kind of fully answer the question. But interest rates, no, you should average them at 5%. That's average. So that means they go to 15 or 25% every now and again for a short period of time. And that just happens. right?
Yes.
And certainly when, so in 93, the reason I bought in 93, one of the reasons I could buy in 93 was that the flat I bought was in Bethnal Green in Zone 2 in London, and it cost me £38,500. Now, obviously, that seems very cheap now. It was actually quite cheap then, because 4 years beforehand, it was over twice the price.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And I know someone who, I think they sold the building for $9 million in 89, and they bought it back in 1993 for $3 million, and that was in Shoreditch.
God, I mean, that's, yes. It does sound unbelievable, doesn't it? Except the fact that there are figures on websites and pieces of paper that confirm that really did happen.
No, it really did happen. And the reason why it happened is because interest rates went up plus 17%, you know, for 6 months. And everyone was absolutely decimated.
I do remember that. I was a child at the time, but I do remember my parents going. And again, I remember my parents who owned property being slapped with, you know, a rent cap. And it didn't matter what the interest rates were doing, they couldn't raise the rent. So everyone who tries to tell me these things can never happen, I go, they're unlikely, but they are possible. And so therefore, you need to put that planning into the mix, really, don't you? Now, I know also that you're very keen on explaining, yes, it's a business, but there's also financial matrices that people should look at. And I have to say, financial matrices send most property people running to the hills, don't they? Because it's not sexy. It's not what they're there for. It's not, frankly, scatter cushions, is it? Or decorative paint. But it is, you're very keen on them. And explain more. What do you think people should be looking at when they're looking at buildings and their businesses?
It's a business at the end of the day. And one third of a business is the finance bit, right? And if you don't understand a third of your business, you're kind of going to be screwed, right? So, and it's the same thing as, you know, one third of your business is sales and marketing. If you don't make any sales, you don't have a business, right? So if you don't look after your finances, you don't have a business. So I think from that perspective, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, we had the people who came into Table Network at the beginning, we gave away real estate appraisals, you know, quite basic, simple ones, but one was for rent to rent, one was for buy to let, one for repo, refurb and refinance and that sort of thing. And just because, you know, there's a lot of places that you can go and get things from gurus and that sort of thing. But actually, to have something that someone really has used and tweaked and made better for 20 years is really quite useful, you know. And there's a very small amount of changes over time, but very little, really. And you need to, when you buy, you need to go, is it going to absolutely wash its face for 5 years rather than I'm buying it because it's going to go up in value? Because that's like luck.
That's luck. Yes. Yes. That's hope. That's the original hope clause, isn't it? Yes. And I think...
Well, so that's not hope that a bank will take, for example.
No.
A bank never sees hope like that. Bank just says, am I guaranteed to get my money back in full? That's the only question on their balance sheet. And then, has this person done it before, will be the next question they ask, you know. And that's it. So it should be, if you go look at developers like St. George, or you go and look at institutional developers like L&G, the only thing they ever ask is, are we guaranteed not to lose money? That's the first question. And it really ought to be the first question in every single small investor's head. Am I guaranteed not to lose money? And if you are guaranteed not to lose money, then you can think about it further. Otherwise, just chuck it in as soon as you can.
Yeah.
Because the faster you put it in the bin.
There's always another opportunity, isn't there?
Yeah, there is always. I mean, don't necessarily wait for the most beautiful opportunity, because it might take a while and the world might change while you're looking for it.
But there are enough, there's enough. And it is about, spreadsheeting, which is, again, boring to some people, but it's essential, because I think people get misled. One of the things I'm going to say now has definitely fallen off a cliff. You don't hear it as much because of the interest rates, which is, I'm just going to earn enough through rent so that I can then ditch my day job and I will have become a property millionaire, which, you know, there is so much wrong with that statement. One of which, of course, is that there isn't, when interest rates move, a lot of free capital roaming around from net rents. You've got to have something more to your portfolio than just that.
Yeah. Well, so I think the guru kind of sell technique, they'll sell any way that sells, right? So they'll tell you that you can buy with 100% no money at all, or using other people's money, or you can, you know, make yourself a millionaire in a year and all this sort of thing. And there's lots of things which are just basically plain rubbish, but they make good fodder for YouTube or for the course or whatever it is. So they can't figure it out. And I think it's, you know, it is very dangerous that people leave, change their lives too early. So of all the educators out there, I still think that Simon is the most honest that I've found, or one of the most honest that I've found. You know, he's kind of certainly up there in the echelon, and he loves teaching, and he also does it. So there's lots of reasons why I like him. And even so, there are people who go on his course who almost ruin their lives by falling into this trap where they persuaded themselves something's going to happen, then it doesn't, and they're left in a bad situation.
And that's because, unfortunately, no matter what you learn about property or anything, it is actually an action thing. You have to go and do the thing to make everything work and do. And there's another hidden thing that I know that you're very keen on, is this concept of tax. Tax is very rarely mentioned in property world, but if you're doing property world, you're going to be paying quite a lot of it, aren't you? And you should be thinking about it.
Increasingly more, actually, because they make it less and less comfortable for property owners. And this government, and this is clearly shown by the last budget, which didn't really do very much, didn't say that much, but it was quite clear that they weren't helping anyone. But there's no agenda towards helping people be housed in this country at the moment. You know, the government is not to get anything at all. And as a result, there's a homeless problem, there's a social housing problem. It's normally the lower end who've got the trouble. That's kind of, I think, one of the, you know, it's not the glamorous bit of property. It's a really needy bit of property. But, I know a few people who have large LHA portfolios or social housing portfolios, and the amount of hoops they're now having to jump through in terms of, you know, every tenant, every LHA tenant, they have to get verified documents from about five different people in their lives in order to go and claim their universal benefit. Well, it's like, the GP's got enough to do without having to do a sworn statement to say that this person is in this situation. But what are you trying to do, you know, to us government? To we want to house these people. They'd make our lives more difficult because you're already not making us make any money.
Yes. I mean, I'm always amazed. I mean, I have got a collection of people because I do keep a proportion of my portfolio for social housing. And, you know, it used to be fine. My tenants, most of all, can't read and write, you know, or they can read and write, but only in very basic languages, are suddenly finding that actually they can only claim online using their smartphone. Well, they don't have a smartphone to begin with. For going online, that's way beyond them. All the things are just put in, little steps are put in their way to make life difficulty. So, you know, if they're going to have a problem, we're definitely going to have a problem. And I think more landlords will struggle with the whole taxing because they just don't see it coming, or the fact that it's going to change so fast. I mean, a lot of SA people are going to be quite surprised by the amount of income they won't receive as a result of the changes. But going back to what you are very keen, because you're setting up Table Talk, it's
table
about accountability.
Network.
It's all about accountability as well, and making sure that you know what it is you should be doing and when. And you had four lovely little letters, which I thought when we were talking earlier, just, you know, your A, B, C, and D make such sense. Can you talk people through A, B, C, and D?
A, B, C, D's. It's something that I've done for the employees that I've worked with for last few companies as well. But I kind of learned it for myself. I don't know whether it literally comes from like Tony Robbins. It's certainly not my idea by myself. I just steal from other people a lot. It's about kind of, and I do it my employees once a week, but around tables that we run, we do it every time we meet as a table, which is once every 2 months. And the A is achievement. Okay. And the B, so you list the achievements you've made since you last made your list. Okay. The achievements, obviously, for the company. Yeah. And then the B is what benefit did it bring to the company? And that's the purpose of the B, is just to ensure that you're not ego-centric about your achievements. So you're not saying, I'm really proud of that, but actually, what did it do for my company? No, not very much. So you really want to...
Absolutely. I had the most amazing month on Instagram.
Yeah. Or I went and, you know, I spoke to 20 people at the networking event, but they all thought I was a twat. So, you know, like that wasn't really a benefit, was it? So there's that kind of, you know, the benefits check in, and and for the employees, it just means that they can work out, okay, how did it benefit the person who's paying my wage? And was it actually worthwhile me doing that? Or am I just slapping myself on the back? Because I, with all my employees, I want them to make themselves redundant as quickly as possible, because then I can give them something more valuable to do, right? So the more they can systemize and streamline themselves, the quicker I can give them higher value and pay them more money to do it. And that's what they want, so it's what I want. And then the C's is for it stands for concerns or challenges. So what can you see that you've got a problem with? If you've got a question for me, you know, what are the challenges that you're currently suffering or that you can see on the horizon? And then the do is the discuss to do next. Yeah, so it's what can be done about those challenges? Can you work it out for yourself? Do we need the discussion so I can help you work it out? And can we try and make sure that you can, you know, overcome those challenges? And then it doesn't make you freeze, or because, you know, when you're under stress, lots of people have different ways of reacting. And some people just go, no, I don't want to, you know, don't know. And it's like, I just want people to feed back to me as often as possible with their challenges.
Yes.
So I can help them. Because otherwise, I'm just looking at you know, you happen to freeze with a smile on your face. How do I know there's something wrong, right?
Yes. How do you know that inside there's this crumpled mass of screamingness going, I just can't do this. Yeah. Somebody find me out. Yes. Yeah. Discussion is really important, isn't it?
Yeah. I think, you know, I want within my company, I want within my every single friend I have, you know, if I can help, then I'm there to help, right? I can't be a friend without being in that position. So, but unless they tell me, I can't read minds. I'm, you know, I'm gifted, but I'm not that gifted.
Absolutely. And so I'm getting the feeling really that no matter how small, you know, a property company is, it might be a one-man band, it should really try and replicate some of the really good things you get in big businesses. You mentioned earlier board meetings. That's when you make decisions, isn't it, that you have to stick by?
Yeah, so I mean, you mentioned earlier that you have to kind of take time to be able to reflect and think. And I think that's, the most valuable pastime, actually, for someone who's in business ever is thinking. You get paid more to think than to do anything else in life. And so the more time you can kind of take out and not be in urgency and actually say, can I think about, and it doesn't have to be, you know, so I'm a creative person and those are the bits that I think about. And I kind of therefore go off a tangent a lot and blah, 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 blah. But actually for people who are, my eldest son, who's my business partner in Table Network, he is incredibly logical and he just wants to logic games. Yeah. And,
all right.
You know, so, and it's because he's got very much he loves science, he loves computers. And he loves coding, and coding works the logic gate. So that's now how his brain works like that, and other people like him, their brain works like that, and that's why coding works like that. You know, that could be true.
Yep.
It could be the other way around, and that'd be probably a self, you know, feeding philosophy and situation. But so the way he thinks about things is very different to me, you know, and he provides value in a different way, but he also needs to, because in urgency or in a bad mood or, you know, while you're kind of running around like a headless chicken, you don't think well. So you have to make space and time to think. And that's why the table's got specifically well, because it's just, we're going to spend a day just thinking and talking about our thinking and really getting to the root of the problem and to the solution. To me, that's what it's all about.
It is, isn't it? And it's like most of the really big companies, they have, you know, non-executive directors who come in with, you know, sit on their boards. They're not part and parcel of the everyday rough and tumble, but they just give clarity and the thought or something that just puts everybody in the right place and makes them go, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's a good idea. I ought to think more on that. And I think the other thing about you're saying about standing back a whole day just thinking, the whole of our lives, we've been programmed to think that if you're not visibly doing something, then you are not achieving anything.
Well, yeah. So I wrote a blog actually a couple of months ago, which I called Time Confetti, which is just about the fact that we are constantly bombarded with distraction or things to do or this or the other. And that's part of, you know, not being able to take yourself out. But it's also that the day, you know, the idea of the day is you do not look at your phone while you're in conversation with other people. Because if you're people, then you're not there. You're not present.
Right? No.
And you don't actually think about what matter at hand. So, yeah, that, I think, so I've spent quite a lot of money on non-execs over the last 30 years. And I think there's, you know, obviously there's a massive advantage to going to wise people who kind of have seen it all before and that sort of thing. But equally, there is an element where, you know, I learned my systems in the 1990s. Yeah. And therefore, most of them involve big piles of paper. that, and actually they're not very relevant anymore. So there's a lot of advice that I could give, which isn't necessarily the best advice for a 21-year-old who is starting off as an entrepreneur. That's one of the reasons why I like the idea of tables, is because your best competition is actually becomes your non-execs for the day. And they're all doing it right now. Yeah. And when they've had a problem, they suffered it. You know, when they really having a problem now, you solved it 3 months ago. Or when you've got a problem, they solved it 6 months ago. Because then they can really help. Whereas, you know, I mean, I really love speaking to, and I still speak to some of them, the non-execs that we've had over the years. But when I talk to them, you know, if they want to open the door to me, then it's a door that leads to someone who's their age, who's probably retired like they are. And therefore, it's kind of not really the door that I need at the time. Because I want to open the door to someone who's younger than me, who's got more energy than me, not who's looking at, you know, actually it's time for my afternoon nap now. Which is where I'm getting to.
Well, I finish all day, Ed. Yeah? I leave out of my bed in the morning and whiz all through the day.
Well, I'm getting to the stage where an afternoon nap feels like it might be an idea.
Oh, dear, dear. So you've done many things. Over all your business life, what are you most proud of, your achievement-wise in business?
Wow. So I think... it's strange, actually, because for me, business and life are actually intermingled entirely. So I don't really see there's a difference between one and the other, because, you know, I've only been employed for 3 months of my whole life other than I was my own boss. So, and I've always decided I was only ever going to do what I enjoyed. So from that perspective, it's all unshakable. So it's actually my biggest success is that my two boys, because one's 17, one's 21, neither of them swear in anger. You know, they only do it in jest. We go climbing together 3 times a week, and I'm best friends with both of them, you know. So from that perspective, it's just incredible. Yeah. And one of them worked with me. There's my best spot.
Yes, you've got something right.
And actually that's the best legacy I could ever get. I think there's an element whereby I've created some things which I kind of but it's more an egotistical, you know, I love building chairs with big people when they sat in them or threw them up and not so big because it was fun. Really liked running a social enterprise where we gave £7,000 a month to charity over a 2-year period, which, felt really good. But I found it really boring from a creative point of view. I'm hoping that Table Network, because we are going to be giving 20% of our profits away to health homeless people, and I'm hoping that is going to be something, you know, I was looking out of our back window, there's a council block opposite on the other side of the street. And I thought, that probably houses about 100 people. Okay. And I can see that within 5 years, we're going to be housing that many people who were previously living under a bridge. And that to me would be a really worthwhile thing to have done. And for all the people, the entrepreneurs that we're helping, someone else help them if we don't, you know. They may not help them as well. We might not help them as well. I don't know. You know, we will try to do things the best way we can do them. But actually, the side effect of being a counseling with people, that really is, you know, for me, but it's not the thing that's going to float Phoenix's boat yet. It'll boat his boat as well. We've got done. You know, for him, I think it's going to be the systems that he can provide and the fact that he's got lots of people who work with it efficiently. And, you know, he loves the kind of the game theory myth of it. It'll take him when he's 50. He'll go, actually, I'm really proud of having housed that many people for that long. But I think at this age, he probably doesn't care. It's, you know, that's just not what it's like about.
Yeah, so we always quote the stat that one of our tenants that we feel most proud about has lived in the house for 80 continual years.
I mean, absolutely, though. But that is that in itself, you know, yes. And that's so we were in the social enterprise, we were housing 35, you know, women who'd previously beaten up or just gone out of prison, were really in a very hard place and needed help to get out of their negative spiral, which is what the donations were for. But first of all, we housed them. We housed 35 people who otherwise would have been in a much worse situation. Yeah. And that, it just, you know, so every year that's 35 years worth of accommodation you're giving to people who are in trouble. That feels really, really good.
Fantastic. I love the fact you didn't give me a monetary answer, because I think property is so much bigger than just numbers and making a profit, although you sometimes don't believe it from the headlines and things.
But life is bigger than that. You know, if you go to really poor places, far more people are smiling than if you go to really wealthy places. There's something to be learned there really quickly.
Absolutely. Now, Ed, we're having to come to close. Sadly, I could talk to you all day, but we're not allowed to. How do people find you? How can they contact you and find out more about your table network?
So I'm pretty easy to find on LinkedIn, Ed Folks. You've just got to spell my name right. It's like all folks, but we replace the L with the W. And then, so Table Network, if you Google Table Network, it's actually written with one word. But if you Google it two words, we're still the top search result for the moment.
Find you.
So they will find us. Come and join the community because it's free. And you're welcome if you run a business or an entrepreneur or have that kind of brain. And it's a supportive environment and there's no selling on it unless we find a service which is absolutely best in class, at which point you will allow them to promote their business on there. But otherwise, there's no selling because we're not providing another LinkedIn where most of the DMs you get in are from me selling you stuff and from, Don doing it. In the Philippines, who's written the email for me, it's going to be, actually, it's the person who owns the business who's actually talking to you, which built for it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for giving me time this afternoon in your very busy schedule. So thank you so much.
It's not so busy, I can't get you in. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Property Solopreneur with me, Rachel Troughton. If you've enjoyed this episode, do hit subscribe and kindly leave a review and share this podcast with anyone you think it would help on their property journey. If you'd like to get hold of my guide for building a successful property business, go to racheltroughton.com/checklist. We only live one life. So let's get your dream a reality through building a profitable property business.